Welcome to episode 529 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Hey, Josh.
Hey. It is weird to be recording on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, well, you were just on vacation. You just got back from vacation. So are you up for this? I mean, you're not so chill that you're not going to be able to think about tech and stuff, are you?
I'm not so chill that I can't think about tech, but I might be chill enough that I'm not like super ranty about anything.
Oh, okay. Well, that is not the case for me. So let's get going.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, let's start the way that we normally do, which is with a little bit of listener feedback. We have a couple of pieces here that were both sent in through the contact form over at thedigitalmediazone.com. That's for the people who don't want to have to type out entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
All right. The first one is from Carl. This is a longtime listener. It's good to hear from you, Carl. He says, "Hey guys, Josh, since you mentioned how you liked the short format on Quibi, did you ever watch the sci-fi series H+, the digital series on YouTube? It came out about 7 years ago, and they had bite-sized episodes, which were released twice weekly. It was an early attempt at a produced series on YouTube, and it had decent production value. It's really interesting how quickly things changed when you consider there were none of the current Netflix, Hulu, Amazon original series at the time. It was a novelty only 7 years ago to have high production shows online. Keep up the good work, Carl."
Carl, it's been forever since we've chatted with Carl. He may be a first-time emailer, but I think he and I have at least conversed over on Twitter. So
yeah, and I know that we've mentioned Carl on the show before, even if the comments have come through Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Or maybe just through the comment form on our post. But no, Carl, I have never heard of this series. But man, you can tell that Carl is a longtime listener, because this does sound like right up my alley. I do want to go and check this out. This sounds really cool. I looked at it a little bit, and it's a little bit different from Quibi. You know, Quibi episodes were 10-ish minutes long. They were normally between like 8 and maybe 14 minutes long. These ones are all like almost every episode is under 5 minutes. Some in the like 3-minute range. And it's like, 3 minutes? Like, can you even do anything in 3 minutes to move a plot along? I don't know. So I'll be curious to check this out. Maybe it didn't work out so well, and that's why you haven't seen more of these over on YouTube. But the plot sounds cool. I've definitely saved this to my YouTube subscriptions, or however it is that the YouTubes work. I don't really know. And we'll be checking this out. Because the episodes are shorter, there's also way more of them. There's like, I think there were almost 50 episodes. So it's a lot. But when you're looking at 3 to 4.5 minutes in length, it's going to take a few episodes to tell a whole story, I think. So I'm excited about this. Thank you for the recommendation, Carl. Canadian Geek in the chat, he said he remembers that show. He says he thought it was novel.
Yeah, you know, I remember not this show, but around that time, there was this big thing for serial short form programming on YouTube. And much of it took place in the form of webisodes that were kind of an adjunct to standard TV series. You may remember that Battlestar Galactica had a whole webisode series where if you didn't watch the webisodes, you didn't necessarily understand the interpersonal relationships between a bunch of the characters.
Yeah, it wasn't all the Pegasus stuff webisodes?
a good amount of the Pegasus stuff was until the movie came out.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I miss Battlestar. That was so good. Cool. All right. Well, I will definitely be checking that out soon-ish. We'll see. I've actually been watching stuff lately, which we'll get to at the end of the show. All right. One more piece of feedback. This was from Jim. He's also a longtime listener, first-time questioner. He says, I met you guys at the Indianapolis Home Server Show meetup some years back and watched as you interviewed Dave McCabe. I never miss your DMZ podcast. Well, thanks, Jim. He says, I like owning my own copies of selected movies and TV series. My DVD library is around 1,000 movies and episodes. My current practice is to rip every movie as an MKV file from the DVD using Make MKV. I also make an M4V file at a bitrate of 1200 kilobits per second using Handbrake. The M4V copy I would use to take along on a trip using my iPhone or iPad or Windows laptop. I put both the MKV and the M4V versions into the Plex movie library. Unfortunately, I see Plex defaulting to the lower bitrate version even on my internal home network, and I must force it to use the higher bitrate MKV version when watching on our Plex-enabled TV. I am a Plex Lifetime subscriber. My Plex server is a QNAP TS453 Pro with 8 gigs of RAM, a Celeron 2 GHz quad-core CPU, and it's got 4 6-terabyte Western Digital Red SMR drives. Given that I can download copies of anything in my Plex library to a mobile device, I'm now wondering if I should perhaps dispense with creating the M4V copy. What do you guys advise for Plex movie and TV episode from DVD strategy? This is a fantastic question. And it really is a uniquely Plex type question because
yes.
Plex, when you are a Plex Pass subscriber, you do have that ability. I think they used to call it sync. I don't know if they still do. Right from your phone or tablet or whatever, you open up the Plex app, find a movie you want to download and click the sync button, and it would download a version of that video file for you straight onto your tablet or phone or whatever device it is that would be downsampled. You know, it would go at a lower bitrate because you're watching on a smaller device and stuff like that. Although it's been a while since I've done this. I think you can pick some level of transcode in there, but
yes,
okay,
you absolutely can. You can determine if you want high quality or if you want it reduced. And you know, I mean, we could go on and on and talk about how this is, but I think the quick answer is, yeah, you don't have to do this anymore. It does it for if you're all in on Plex, it does it for you.
Yeah, yeah. You and I are in complete agreement, I think, Richard. Getting rid of these extra copies that you're doing, everything about this strategy makes your life easier. You don't have to mess around with Handbrake to recopy movies to a lower bitrate manually anymore. And this whole idea of like Plex always picking the wrong version, the lower quality version when you're trying to watch at home, that would drive me insane. Like, I am not going to go in and manually pick the correct version all the time.
Right, right.
And even if I'm willing to deal with that, if anyone else in my family goes to watch something, they're not going, like, and I can't expect them to do that because they won't care, but I will. And if I walk in the room and they're watching a movie at a lower quality, I'm going to be like, what are you doing? And let me fix this for you. But they're not going to want me to fix that for them. So yeah, I think you scrap the lower quality ones and just use this functionality that's built into Plex. The other thing that I thought of while reading his message was, how often are you actually taking those lower, you know, those smaller files and putting them on another device? If you're doing this all the time, then maybe keep them around, because every time you do this, you know, it does take time, you know, and every time you want to copy it down to that device, it's going to take time. Are you frequently putting those movies on multiple devices? Like, are you putting it on 3 tablets before you go on a road trip because it's 1 tablet for each of your kids? Well, then that's kind of a pain and that's going to take a while.
Okay.
Those are the only reasons that I can think of for not.
There's still a better solution.
Okay, so what's the better solution
there? I don't think it's necessary to use Handbrake anymore because Flex itself will allow you to create duplicates of your files at lower resolutions and lower file sizes specifically for the ability to like take them elsewhere. So you can pre-encode a lower quality version of a movie and have it ready. Now, what I don't know, but I would suspect that if you've done that, it's probably a little bit smarter about choosing the right one to play on your in-home network TV.
Yeah, probably.
So that might be something to look into too. And plus, oh man, I do not miss Handbrake
yeah.
at all. I still have Handbrake installed on a machine because I've used it for work when I've received a video and it's just terribly, terribly encoded. And there's like either I need to fix the tele-signing problems or I need to even just like compress it better than they did. Handbrake is great for stuff like that. But I am so glad that I don't have to go through this process for my movies anymore.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, let's move on then to our news this week. So thank you to Jim and to Carl for that feedback, and hopefully we'll get other really great questions and suggestions from the rest of you for future episodes. So off to the news. I'm real curious what Richard has to say about this first story. The first story this week is Disney has decided that Mulan, the live-action version of Mulan, which was slated to come out pretty much as the world shut down. I believe it was like March 20-something was supposed to be when it launched in theaters. And they couldn't because all the theaters shut down across the entire universe. Pretty sure universe, not just country or world, just the universe. So I've been, you know, my whole family has been super anxious to see this movie. And it's just, you know, they said, well, no, it'll come out in July. And then, no, not July. It's going to be later. So now they've decided that, like Trolls World Tour, they're going to release it digitally. And they're going to do it through their newest streaming service, Disney Plus. So the way this works is if you have Disney Plus, you can then, it's hard to even find the right words. It's essentially a rental of the movie on September 4th. For $30, $29.99, I think. And you can watch it just like you could with Trolls World Tour. You pay $30 to watch it the day it comes out. And you just have to do all this through Disney Plus. They are doing some things a little bit differently, though. Apparently, if you're a Disney Plus subscriber, you can keep watching it. It's not just a one-time rental that you have 72 hours to watch, you know, all of the normal restrictions that we're used to seeing on Disney movie rentals, or not just Disney, all digital movie rentals. So I could watch it over and over and over again after I pay my $30.
As long as you are a Disney Plus customer. And that this is where this is different from the Trolls World thing, which was essentially an early rental.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as you're a Disney Plus customer, you can continue to watch this movie. Once you stop being a Disney Plus customer, you no longer have access to this movie, and you will have to re-rent it or purchase it again if you want it. And you know you're going to want it, so this is a really good hook for them to keep you tied into Disney Plus. Oh, by the way, Josh, you mentioned if you're a Disney Plus customer, you get to continue watching it. You have to be a Disney Plus customer even to buy it for $30.
Well, so I don't think you should call it buying, though.
Well, whatever it is that you're doing, I wrote the words, you're purchasing access to the title.
Yes.
Right? So when you purchase that access, you already have to have a Disney Plus subscription to do that. And we know about all of this because Disney's CEO, who I'm ashamed to admit, I don't know his name, the name of the new CEO, he talked about how they expect this will probably also give them another bump in Disney Plus subscribers, the same way that Hamilton did.
Mm-hmm.
So really, really smart from that perspective, and a good way of, in their mind, kind of recouping the investment they made in this film. If you've seen the trailers for this film, this was not a cheap film to produce.
No.
This looks like it is an epic style film. And I'm very excited about this. I think this is really cool, but I'm probably not going to do it.
Oh, we are for sure doing this. Like September 4th.
Of course you are, because you have kids. Of course you are. I will probably wait for the disc because I will want to have the permanent media and the title available to me regardless of what happens to Disney Plus.
Oh, we're buying like, that too. But like that's also for sure going to happen.
Okay, now you're at $60.
Yes. Yes. Well, and part of that is this is going to sound all whatever, but part of it is just wanting to support actors who don't look like me. That's part of it. That's absolutely part of us wanting to be part of this.
Sure.
Like if the movie is absolute garbage, maybe we won't end up buying it, but we're probably still going to buy it. Going back to that question of, you know, is this going to cause a big bump in Disney Plus subscribers? The way that, at least the way that I assume Hamilton did, I don't think it will, because how many people want to see this movie, especially early, who aren't already Disney Plus subscribers? I have to imagine that's a small number.
I don't know the answer to that, but I do think that this is, you know, whereas Hamilton hit an audience of adults who might not otherwise have been subscribing to Disney Plus, this might get those people that were on the fence and couldn't decide if they wanted to add yet another subscription service if they have kids. And I can't imagine that this wouldn't be the thing that puts it over the edge. Or just if you're like friggin' nostalgic and want to see this movie. Like, I can't wait for this movie just because this was one of my favorite hand-drawn animations.
Hmm.
I loved this film. I think this is such a good movie and such a good story based on, like, I believe a poem from literally centuries ago.
Right.
So I'm very excited about this. I can't justify paying $30 to watch it and then paying $30 again 4 months later for the media.
Right. Especially when you know for sure that you would purchase it physically,
right,
because you're into purchasing movies physically.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that makes total sense.
I think the one thing that we should mention here is that while this is probably not a surprise that this is how they're handling this, because this was really the biggest anticipated movie of the summer, even though it was going to end up being the second movie of the summer, Tenet will probably still be the first movie of the summer if it does, in fact, come out. But the CEO was very clear about the fact that this is a one-off. They're trying to explore the right release and windowing models during this whole thing. And right now, this is the best alternative that they have, because clearly people are not going to go and watch this in theaters in the numbers that they need to make their investment back on this.
Right, right. Tenet is the other big movie that I was really looking forward to this summer. And it sounds like that one is getting released around the rest of the world over Labor Day weekend, but not here because we can't get our crap together.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
Okay, so drag me out of the dark place, Richard.
All right, out of the dark place, let's talk about Kavo. We haven't talked about Kavo in a while, although I think we did mention that Kavo had a release recently where they enabled some sort of like collaborative viewing thing between users. Well, they've come out with a new update to their TV software. And the new update is really the first update that they've had in 9 months. So here's where my rant comes in. 9 months has gone by since the last update they put out to the Cavo Control Center software. Roughly 15 months ago, they switched from a model where you just buy this thing to a model where you buy it and then pay a subscription and continue to pay a subscription fee on top of the purchase price year after year after year. And presumably, that was to pay for them to continually improve this product. And they hadn't had a release in 9 months. Prior to that, they'd had one every 1 or 2 months. So I don't know what they've been doing for 9 months, but hey, they finally have a release that updates the dashboard experience. That's good. It needed some updates. It needed to be kind of cleaned up a little bit. It also adds Disney Plus, HBO Max, and Apple TV Plus. Really good additions to have as part of the Cavo Control Center interface. And if you don't understand the implications of that, what that means is that now you'll be able to search by voice across any program that's not only on all of your other stuff like Hulu and everything else, but also in these services. So you want to watch The Morning Show or you want to watch some movie that's on HBO, it's going to find it for you and it's going to take you there automatically. That's a really good thing. Not Peacock, which is really the new hotness, right? So that's the latest thing. They're not there yet. And just for a little bit of perspective, Disney Plus came out when? 9 months ago.
You mean about the last time, about the time we got the last update?
Yeah. So if they were practicing agile development processes previously, where they would release often, they've clearly stopped that. And now they're dropping big releases with lots of updates, because this includes lots of updates. They're also adding support for the new Xfinity box, for new smart TVs, for the new Roku TVs. So lots of good stuff. They have also added the ability to launch a ton of other applications, including things like Crackle and YouTube TV by voice. You'll be able to launch them, but you won't be able to control them. So they're not actually part of the whole control system. You can't say, I want to watch Cobra Kai, and it's going to find it on, well, actually, is that still on YouTube TV or is that on Hulu now? Anyway, it's not going to get you to shows on those specific services, but it is going to at least launch the apps. So that's a nice thing. It's good to see them updating this. I'm really frustrated that after turning to a model that kind of makes the promise with customers that we're going to continue to improve this product, that they failed to do so for nearly a year.
So is it possible that part of that 9 month window in them working on this next update is that they've also been trying to get their processes under control so that they can be doing these updates a little bit more frequently?
It's possible, but how did they manage to get releases out every month or two when they started, but not now? And then I thought, well, maybe it's COVID. But yeah, but that didn't really hit for real until February, March timeframe. So what happened between November and March? So yeah, I'm very unhappy with how this has played out. I think y'all might remember that I bought a Cavo the day it was announced. I used it for about 4 months. And after, well, dropping the remote off of the arm of the TV about 57 times because of how it's, or the arm of the sofa about 57 times because of the way it's designed, but also wanting to throw it across the room a couple of times, I ultimately decided to go back to my Harmony. So, yeah, I mean, look, I know there are people that like this. I personally did not like the physical remote. That was my big beef with this thing. Mm-hmm. These are good updates. If you're okay with that physical remote, then these are really good updates. And I just hope that they can manage to get some updates out more frequently to get Peacock and other stuff like that into this service.
All right. Well, we've got a little bit of Peacock news. So why don't we move on to that?
Yeah. Speaking of Peacock. So, you know, I don't want to pay for Peacock, but I am, let's say, oh, no, I can't say it because it just, it sounds dirty. Peacock curious? Title!
Yeah.
So, I have found out that, we might have talked about this before when we talked about the deal that they made with Android coming out with Peacock on Android early. But if you sign up for Peacock on an Android device, you can get up to 3 months free of their premium tier. So that's a $5 service. It's not the $10 service that has no ads whatsoever, but it's the $5 service that has limited ads, which is way better than what you're getting if you're not premium because you're getting lots of ads.
Well, does the $5 tier, is that also what gets you access to the exclusives?
It also gets you access to basically double the content, right? So if you're interested in any of their exclusive series like Brave New World and stuff like that, you can watch the first two episodes for free, but you have to pay after the free drugs model.
Okay.
This will get you access to the whole series, and then you can continue to watch those. If you've been holding out because you're like, well, they're releasing those episodes every week, I want a little bit of time to go by so I get to see the whole thing. I mean, I'm just saying, because maybe that's what I'm doing. What I've learned is that this 90-day trial is going to basically end in tiers. So you have until August 14th to sign up for the 90-day free trial, and then you have to redeem it by August 31st. After that, your next best thing is a 60-day free trial, and you have until September 14th to sign up for that, and you have to redeem that by the end of September. And then again, in October, on October 15th, up to October 15th, you can get a 30-day free trial. So basically, October 15th is the last day that you can get any extended free trial of Peacock. And that has to be redeemed by Halloween, by October 31st. So, and you know, October 31st is probably a great day to do that because I'm sure nobody's going to be trick-or-treating this year. So you can stay home and watch scary movies instead. But this is a really weird way of doing things. But my point in bringing it up now is if you want the 90 days, you got to do it now. You got to do it before 14th of August. Sign up for it. And then by the end of August, if you want to wait until the last possible minute to actually activate it, you can activate it on August 31st. And that should, I don't know for sure, but that should give you enough time to at least get through the end of the series that started when the service launched. And really the one that I want to watch is Brave New World.
And what's Brave New World?
It's the book Brave New World expanded into a universe that they can tell as a series.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I got this notification on my Android phone, of course. And I thought, oh, this is maybe something I should do. Like, it's free content. Like, why not? And then I thought, yeah, but then I'm going to have to remember to cancel it, like I was supposed to do with Quibi, which I forgot to do. So maybe I just don't care. Well, wait, they're making a Battlestar series. I'm definitely going to want this for the Battlestar series. So let me quick Google when the Battlestar series is coming out. No one knows. Like, I don't even think they're filming yet. So this doesn't help.
Yeah, I don't expect to see that until sometime next year, probably.
At the earliest, sometime mid next year would be my guess.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know that I'm even going to redeem this.
Hmm. Yeah, but I mean, 90 free days. Why not?
Because then I got to remember to cancel it or else it costs me $5.
I have a surefire way of handling that now. As soon as I sign up for anything with one of these deadlines, I create a calendar entry with multiple reminders.
Right. Right. I do that occasionally, but all of that seems like a lot of work for a service that I'm probably barely going to watch anyway.
That you don't want to pay the $5 for. I know, I get it, but I'm trying to vote with my money.
No, that makes sense. All right, on to our next topic here, we've got some Android TV news. Really two new features coming out, and one of them is really good. One of them might be annoying to some of you. So we'll start with the potentially annoying one first. They are making some small changes to the home screen. They've kind of got a sort of some empty space above the first row of your favorited app icons. And so what they're doing is they're kind of pushing that down a little bit and giving you a carousel of curated content that you can cycle through there. And it sounds like it's curated and based on some of your viewing habits. So it should theoretically be stuff that you have a higher likelihood of wanting to watch. So I'm generally in favor of things like that, not just straight up, you know, throw some ads at me for whoever's paying the most money for a service that or show that I don't care about. So that sounds good. You can arrow through them. You know, it's going to be a few of them at a time. And here's where it could get super annoying for some of you. When you are arrowing through all of them, if you stop on one, it'll automatically start playing the trailer for it. Very similar to how Netflix does things. And I hear people endlessly complaining about Netflix doing that.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that.
Okay. I don't know. Like, it seems like...
You can turn it off in Netflix. I turned it off.
Yeah. It seems like it's a useful feature to me, but then again, I barely use those types of things. So I don't know. Here's the one that is cool. You can now subscribe to other services through Android TV in a way that's way more simplified. So like, let's say, and maybe this actually sort of ties in with this new carousel, the screenshot from the story that we're going to link to over at The Verge showed somebody signing up for Epics. So one of those premium movie channels. So let's say you decide you want to sign up for Epics. Well, if you're on your TV, like that's going to be awful, right? Because I have to put in an email address. My email address is like 47 characters. I have to come up with a password. That's like another 47 characters.
And it needs to be a secure password. So you're shifting between keyboards.
Exactly. Exactly.
Frequently to enter the password.
You have to put in your credit card information, which probably also means your address and your phone number and all that stuff. Now, this isn't maybe as awful on Android TV because you can typically use an Android phone to do all of that, but it's still kind of cumbersome. So instead, what they're doing is allowing you to basically just link it straight to your Google account. So you say, yeah, I want to subscribe to Epics. Bam, click the button, subscribe. Everything's set up through your Google account that has your preferred payment method already set up. And presumably, you ought to be able to manage the subscription there too, because the Google Play Store already supports subscriptions. So you can go in, cancel it from your phone or whatever at any place. And this is just a super fast, easy way of subscribing to services like that right from your couch. This sounds great.
This is so smart.
I'm going to guess, Richard, that Apple TV does this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm wondering if what they're doing is leveraging the YouTube TV capability to add channels and just exposing that here in Android TV. This is so smart. This is exactly what services need to be doing. And if this can basically eliminate that need to re-log, I mean, you know, sign up aside, then every month to have to re-authenticate, why should I have to do that? Why can't it just be part of the account that is my TV device, and it knows that I'm me, and I don't have to prove that I'm me anymore.
Yeah.
I love this. This is a good, good move for Android TV users.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is some of the best news we've got to report on tonight, I think, if you're an Android TV user, which I still wonder how many of us are out there.
Well, I mean, there are at least 1,000 more of them now with the TiVo stream thing, right?
1,000
more? I'm joking. I don't know how many of those they sold. Well, so I'm curious, is this something that will come down to the TiVo stream, do you think?
I would think so, because I think the TiVo stream just gets regular Android TV updates.
Yeah. So there was also a recent update to the TiVo stream, which I did, but I didn't notice anything different in my standard Android TV dashboard or home experience. So maybe I need to try it again.
Yeah, I've been on vacation for a few days. So I don't know, but I can check on my Shield and on my TiVo stream and let you know. All right, last video story for this week. And that is another one that is probably something that Richard is not at all interested in. And that is Movies Anywhere is working on or releasing a new feature for allowing this watch together sort of experience. Richard hates these watch together ideas. He doesn't like enjoying content with other people.
No, I don't like people talking through content.
Okay, well, that problem is at least the audible talking is solved here. That's not an issue because it uses text.
Okay.
Chat.
All right.
So are you okay with like our Twitch stream that we've got going on right now? Are you okay with the text chat kind of scrolling up vertically over the video on the left side?
I am, but just like the text chat, often I can miss stuff. Like I get involved in the story and then meanwhile, like, you know, a whole screen full of stuff has gone by and I didn't know that you were yelling at me because I wasn't paying attention to you in text.
Well, you won't be able to miss it here because it's not a separate window, which will probably actually annoy you. Like it is over top of the movie.
So I'm having a hard time understanding this. You're talking about something that only works on mobile devices, or how would this work, say, on my Apple TV? How do I text on my Apple TV?
I have no idea how you text on your Apple TV. I've never used an Apple TV, but but this does work on more than just mobile. It works on mobile, works on web, which, you know, then you'd have a full physical keyboard in front of you. It even works on, they said smart TV apps. I'm hoping that also includes Android TV, Xbox, PlayStation, Roku, all of that type of stuff. Also, because Movies Anywhere is basically everywhere. So yep. I'm hoping it basically just works all of the places that have a Movies Anywhere app. But
well, I think except Canada, because they don't like Canada for some reason.
Oh, sorry, Canada. We still like you. So I have no idea, Richard, how to tell you how to text chat on your Apple TV. But the other cool thing about this is while you're watching the movie with up to 8 of your friends, or no, 9 of your friends, because I think it's a total of up to 10 people watching a movie. Maybe ideally for Movies Anywhere, the experience would be that everyone has already bought a copy of the movie, but they don't have to have purchased a copy of the movie because they, and we've talked about this recently also, they've recently rolled out this screen pass feature, which allows right. you to allows you to share movies with friends. So this is built right in. So when you set up one of these watch together parties and send out the code to everybody, if everybody owns the movie, cool. It's just going to watch it from their collection, I guess. But if they don't, and it's a screen pass eligible title, then it'll just use screen pass to do it. And I think that's pretty smart.
I think this is brilliant. I think this is the differentiator for this service from any of these watch together things that anybody else is offering, because this is literally giving you the ability to share your film with friends and watch it together, and they wouldn't otherwise have the ability to do that. I think that's pretty compelling.
Yeah. Yeah. So that plus the ability to watch on lots of different devices, those are the two main differentiators, because a lot of these other devices or services that are doing it, it's very locked in. Like Hulu, you have to do it on PC. And everybody who's doing it has to have an ad-free plan. You know, there's just lots of limitations like that. Twitch has this service, but because Twitch is owned by Amazon, it only works with Amazon Prime. You know, there's all sorts of limitations. And there's
Movies
limitations
Anywhere,
here, too.
Yeah. Yeah, well, right. But Movies Anywhere is Movies Anywhere is Movies Anywhere. Like, you have it or you don't. There's not different plans you have to worry about.
Right. But not everything within Movies Anywhere is screen pass eligible.
That's true.
So there are some limitations, but this does sound like the best possible implementation of a watch together feature. So now do you want to try this? Now do you want to watch a movie with me?
Maybe if you're interested in a good movie.
I watch good. I don't just watch Fast and the Furious, Richard.
I wonder if they'll let you do this with Mulan. I'll bet not.
I bet Mulan's not going to be. Well, you mean like once it finally comes to Movies Anywhere? Because that won't happen until the physical release, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. They're not going to put this. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I'm confusing my Disney-related properties.
I don't know why you would find any of this confusing, Richard.
Well, all right. So maybe I'm not interested in watching a movie with people, but do you want to listen to music remotely together?
Well, maybe. Maybe.
I don't get this.
This one's a little weird. So basically, same sort of concept, but with music. So Spotify is adding remote listening parties. So get five people not together because of COVID-19. You can do this remotely. So everybody's at their own house or whatever. And you can all start listening to the same playlist or podcast or whatever together. You all have to be Spotify premium subscribers. But once you all get into this party together, anyone can add and remove songs from the playlist. Anyone can skip songs. So, you know, people could be jerks about this crap.
Right. You're not just skipping it for yourself. You're skipping it for everybody because you're all listening together.
Right. Right. I don't know about this one. It's an interesting feature, but I have a hard time thinking of the use case for it.
Right. That's exactly. Oh, you and I are such geeks. That's exactly what I was thinking. What is the use case? Under what conditions, like what situation would be right for me to say, yeah, I'll listen to other people's music, or I'll listen to music with other people that aren't here, and I'll give over control of what we're listening to those other people as well. Like, why would I ever? Well, first of all, I'm a control freak, so that's a hard thing.
But I just thought of an example. I have a friend. He and I used to work together. We don't anymore. We both have very similar taste in music, especially the type of music that we listen to while we're working. We're both really big fans of electronic music, especially while working. And we're frequently sending each other like track suggestions and stuff. And this actually is something we would use. Although I don't know if he's a Spotify premium subscriber. I'm going to have to find out. Because okay, if we are, like, this would work.
What if like something old from Tiesto comes on and you can't stand it? So, and he loves Tiesto.
Well, that won't be a problem in that specific case because he doesn't. But I get what you're saying. I guess it just depends on how controlling you want it. Like, I guess to me, like it's 3 to 5 minutes for a song, right? If you don't like a song, I think you can handle it for 3 or 5 minutes.
I guess so.
Terrible.
Yeah, I think people are gonna. I don't know. We'll see. I wouldn't. If anyone ends up using this, tell us, because I don't. First of all, have a premium account anymore, so I won't. But I have a hard time envisioning this in anyone's life.
This could be a fun way to do remote office DJ stuff, right? Like everybody's working from home. Everybody on the team wants to listen to music together while they're doing some combined thing or something. I don't know.
I was thinking it would be kind of cool on like a Zoom happy hour, but you can't have everybody listening to music because that would be a cacophonous mess.
Right.
Right. So, yeah. But hey, now if Zoom could partner with a music service that could do this kind of thing, that would be cool.
I like that idea.
Because then it would be piped in, like in the background.
Right. Right. That would be good. It'd be really, you should sell that idea to Zoom. I like that.
I need a patent.
Right. Good luck with that. So, one more quick Spotify story. And that is, this was a big one for me. Maybe this isn't a big deal for you, but one of the things that has frustrated me for years with Spotify and Google speakers around my house is that if I'm listening to Spotify on my Windows PC, it's got a little button for Spotify Connect devices. So I can say, you know, play this on my Xbox or play this on my Harman Kardon Invoke, like that uses Spotify Connect. But Google speakers, like the Google Assistant speakers, those don't use Spotify Connect. They use Chromecast.
Right.
So anything that was Chromecast doesn't show up in that list in the Windows desktop client. So what I would have to do if I'm listening on my Windows PC and I want to switch to listening to one of my or multiples, because I have speaker groups set up with my Google speakers, I'd have to then pull out my Android phone and it would say, hey, we see you're playing on Windows PC. You want to switch to this device? No, but I do want to see what's playing. And then from my phone, it would list all of my Chromecast devices and I could switch then. That's annoying. Like, I don't want to have to pull out extra devices just to send audio to different devices. Hallelujah, they've fixed this. Now, in the Windows client, I can see all of my Chromecast devices. So all of the individual speakers and the speaker groups, it's all there, finally.
This is nice. Amazon Music has the same problem.
Oh.
I don't get it. I don't understand why you can't select your output source or your output option in the desktop app. It's ridiculous. You can do it on the mobile apps. You can't do it on desktop. This is something that Apple Music has built in. I mean, it makes sense because they have their whole Apple Music sharing system, but I don't understand why third-party vendors aren't jumping on this and trying to make it easier to play from your desktop. I think the reason that we're starting to see a push for this more now is because people are spending time in front of their actual computers during the day now at home.
That could
and
be.
It's not just a matter of, oh, I'll just like pick up my phone.
So just to clarify what you said there, does Apple Music from the Apple Music app on your Mac allow you to play that music to a Chromecast device?
No. It allows me to play it to an AirPlay device.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. That's all its ecosystem. Right. Well, right. Spotify has always done the same thing too with its ecosystem, Spotify Connect.
Okay.
That's the difference here. Spotify Connect, which is built into some TVs and the Xbox and stuff
yeah,
like that.
All of those have always shown up. I mean, come on. Spotify Connect is really just ties into other people's connectivity.
Well, it basically ties into anything that has a Spotify app because it spins up the Spotify app on that device. You know, if I pick my Xbox, it opens the Spotify app on the Xbox.
Right. If you pick a Sonos speaker, it's going to use the Sonos service. Mm-hmm. If you pick an Echo speaker, it's going to use the Amazon's ability to play Spotify on your Echo speaker.
Right. Okay. Richard's not going to believe what I'm about to say, but some quick gaming news here. He's looking at all these bullet points and going,
I'm looking at close to a page.
I'm going
to
make this quick. So first up, an update on the Game Pass stuff. The last time we talked, we talked about how they were going to bundle Project X Cloud into the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription, giving you access to streaming games in the $15 Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription. We knew it would come in September, and we were told that we would get an update on the name. Well, we still don't know what the name is, but we do have the date. It's coming on September 15th. It's going to be over 100 Xbox Game Pass games, but we still don't know the complete library. The other quick update here on the xCloud stuff is that Microsoft has decided to stop testing xCloud on iOS, at least as they're currently doing it. And it's making a lot of people think that Apple is playing hardball here. They've always made these game streaming services really difficult on the companies wanting to implement them. Stadia, not available on iOS. It took over a year before Steam was able to launch their game streaming app on iOS. So it's kind of leaving us to wonder, well, maybe it's just not going to happen. Maybe the Project X Cloud, the game streaming functionality for Xbox, just won't come to iOS. And that would be a real shame for people in the US, because iPhone usage in the US, iPad usage everywhere is huge. And to not be able to stream Xbox games would really, really stink. But I kind of feels like that's what's going to happen here.
Nah, I don't know. But I would expect this will get resolved before either the September or October Apple events.
You think?
Yes, I think. Because this is the kind of thing that Apple would want to be able to come out and say, and you're going to be able, like, this is the perfect opportunity for showing off a partnership of this crazy, like, fluid gaming system that is all in the cloud. And look, it runs seamlessly on our brand new iDevice.
That requires a subscription that they're not going to be able to take 30% of. And in a lot of ways, competes with their own game subscription service.
You say they're not going to be able to take 30% of it. They'll take a cut of it. If it's going to be on there, they'll take a cut of it. And if Microsoft thought otherwise ever, then what the hell were they thinking?
Well, what if you can't sign up for the subscription through the app? Because I don't think you can on the Android app. I think you just already have to be a Game Pass subscriber on the Android side.
Yeah, and in which case it would be considered a consumption app like Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be able to get away with it. I don't know. This has to happen.
I hope
this
you're right.
This has to happen.
I hope you're right. I'm just,
you can't alienate
in the negative space here.
Like, what is it? Like 30 to 40% of the public on mobile platforms?
Are you sure?
Am I sure?
Are you sure you can't alienate those people? Because Apple does that.
Well, no, I mean, Microsoft can't.
Well, but I think that this is Microsoft saying, we give up because Apple's making this too hard.
No.
Or
this
Apple's
is about
not
Microsoft
willing to do
making
it.
Concessions. I can't believe that Apple isn't willing to do it. It's about what it's going to cost.
Maybe. So you're saying that you think that Apple would allow them to do it if they give Apple 30% of those Game Pass subscriptions?
If they have a financially agreeable arrangement, yeah.
Okay, maybe, but I think that's total crap. But they can do that, and that's why they're appearing before federal, you know, before Congress, and Microsoft isn't, I guess.
Yeah, whatever. Apple.
I mean, that is
Apple,
why they're before
Facebook,
Congress.
Facebook, Twitter. I mean, everybody's before Congress.
Not everybody.
We'll get Microsoft up there soon enough.
Microsoft's not up there right now.
No, they're just dealing with the EU right now.
Microsoft, they've been there. They've done that. They've learned their lessons. All right, let's move on. Sony gave us a little bit more information on what we can expect in terms of controllers and other third-party peripherals and accessories and stuff with the PS5. No, we still don't have a date on the PS5 or pricing or any of that information. Same with the Xbox Series X. But we do know that you will be able to use your PS4 DualShock controllers on the PS5, but only if you're going to be playing a backwards compatible PS4 game. You will not be able to use your PS4 controllers to play PS5 games. And it does make sense. Like, this is how every other generation of gaming consoles has always worked. All of them have worked this way. Well, there have been some slight, that's not entirely true. The Wii did support GameCube controllers, I guess. So there have been some one-offs here and there, but they're saying no, like, of course you can't use a PS4 controller to play PS5 games. The PS5 controller has new functionality that the PS4 controller didn't. So,
but
no.
Is every game going to use that? I mean, couldn't they map?
Right. That's like, I'm sure there'll be lots of games that don't use it or do use it, but in ways that don't really matter. Like, you know, better rumble functionality is one of the features of the DualSense controller coming to the PS. Oh. Yeah, who cares? Who cares? I don't care. I really don't care. Yeah, this just feels like the old way of doing things. Well, we're not going to support the old controllers because we want you to buy new ones, duh. Like, that's what this is actually about. That's not the case across the board, fortunately. They are saying that most licensed special peripherals, and that means racing wheels, fighting sticks, that sort of thing, they will work with PS5 titles and, of course, backwards compatible PS4 games. Also, the PlayStation VR and all of its related accessories will work. You will need an adapter if you want to use the PlayStation VR camera, but they're going to make that adapter available for free, so that's good. But to compare with what's going on the Xbox side, Microsoft said last year, all of your Xbox One accessories, they just work with Series X. Bring them forward. You know, if you spent $180 on the Elite controller, it's fine because it's going to work on the Series X for Xbox One and Xbox Series X games. So go ahead and buy them.
What a delightful approach to customer experience.
Right. Consumer-friendly approach to doing things. That's the new Microsoft. It's weird. I'm still not used to it. But on the Xbox side, like, seems like everything they're doing, super consumer-friendly.
Yeah. No, it's good. They'll rename everything eventually, but, you know.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. To something even dumber. Yeah. That will definitely happen. Maybe not. The Xbox stuff doesn't seem to get horribly named the way that everything else that Microsoft puts out is, but we'll see. Except for the Xbox One console. That was pretty dumb. But anyway, let's move on real quick. It is a new month, so we've got a bunch of new free games from Xbox and from PlayStation. I'm not going to give you descriptions on all these games, and I'm done talking about this stupid schedule that Microsoft puts on all of their free games with gold. If you really care, we've got the link in the show notes. But the games this month on Xbox, Portal Knights and Override Mech City Brawl, those are your Xbox One games that are free this month. And your back compat titles, they're both original Xbox games. MX Unleashed, I think that's bikes, like BMX bikes, and Red Faction 2. So if you want to play some, like, I don't know, 17-year-old Xbox games, cool. You can do that. And then on PlayStation, your PlayStation Plus games for August are Fall Guys Ultimate Knockout. I am going to briefly discuss this one because it looks so fun. It is it's basically a 60-player online obstacle course game, and it looks hilarious and super, super fun. If I had PlayStation Plus, I would be checking this out, but I don't. So it does make me want to go and find out if it is a PlayStation exclusive, because if not, I might have to go and get this game for Xbox because it looks really, really, really fun. So that's it for your PlayStation games and your Xbox games that are free this month. And that is it for our news. So, Richard, let's move on to what's going on in our entertainment centers. What is going on in your entertainment center?
So a bunch of stuff, and this includes a number of hardware and I guess hardware updates. So the first thing that I did, we're talking about 2 weeks here, so about a week and a half ago, I spent some time, I think we talked about this on this show actually, finally moving my Wi-Fi controller off of a spare Windows computer that I've been using and moving it onto my Synology box. And I think this is something that you were contemplating in terms of maybe moving your Unify to a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, that's where I've got mine running right now.
So you did end up doing that.
Yeah.
I didn't remember if you had or not. So yeah, so now the funny thing is the only thing that I have running on this old PC is PlayOn. Like, it's the only thing left. And I'm starting to wonder, why do I still use that? Like, I have Play on Cloud if I have on-demand needs for stuff that I forgot to record, and that gets most of the services. And Play on itself, I'm not actually subscribing to anything to record automatically. Play on Cloud is a little bit more of a hassle, but I'm thinking I might be able to turn off yet another PC.
Well, that's kind of cool.
I know. I'm happy about that.
But you're using Play on to get stuff to your Plex library. If you use Play on Cloud,
then I have to download it and then move it over to the library. And like it's a hassle. But I'm only using Play on demand and as an exception case anyway. So does it matter? Like, yeah, I might be able to turn that off, which is cool. I'd be happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I did very recently, in fact, today recently, was I pulled out my old LG Blu-ray drive. Now, you may remember that I had at one time purchased the LG Blu-ray drive that was capable of reading 4K discs. So I was able to back up my UHD Blu-rays. And then at one point in time, that Blu-ray drive failed. And so I sent it into LG, and they eventually, after months of going back and forth and delays and who knows what, sent me a replacement that had the new firmware that no longer allowed you to read UHDs. And I started doing some reading recently, and I learned that, in fact, there's a way that you could force the hard drive firmware to downgrade to the lower version.
Nice.
And then because that was so complicated, people started building their, like, basically taking the firmware, decoding it, changing the code, and re-encoding it so that it was customized firmware that allowed you to do the things that you weren't able to do with the LG firmware. And then because flashing that is such a pain in the neck and so complicated, people started building software that allowed you to select which of the custom things you wanted to automatically flash onto your drive. So I had to make the decision. Do I trust
right.
that someone that manipulated firmware or a piece of hardware that I owned did so without malicious intent in terms of like embedding anything else in there, and that the person who wrote the software that I downloaded and ran to put that, well, I just gave up. Spoilers, I did it. So now I'm able to once again back up my UHD discs that I purchased. So I have started that process after only being able to back up the Blu-ray one. So I'm kind of happy about that.
That is awesome. That's a giant pain in the butt. And what you're doing sounds like all of the craziness that people have done when, like, you know, when you've got like an old video game console, people have found ways to mod them and make it so that you can run games right off the hard drive and stuff.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of process. And every time you're like, I don't know that I actually want to install this.
Should I really be doing this on something on my network? I don't know.
Right.
But yeah. So, you know, if I don't have stories of woe to tell in a couple months, I'll be happy. Now, I also did something really, you know, every once in a while we talk about reading and we talk about books as media. So I think that media readers kind of count. And we had two very old third generation Kindles sitting around that were flaky as hell. They just, they sometimes reacted to keyboard presses. They sometimes turned on, they sometimes didn't. They were basically useless.
Third gen and Kindle, is that like during Bush's presidency? Like, how old are we talking?
Really
here?
Old. Like, these are the ones that have the full keyboard on them.
Yeah. Was Obama even president yet?
It was really, they're thin. They're really thin. So it was a massive improvement over the first two generations. But nonetheless, they're really old. But they're still perfectly good book readers. And both Edward and his best friend had one of these, and they both died. And I'm like, all right, I'll look into them. And I tried to see if I could restore them, and I can't. And it's like, you know, the battery's probably just shot. And I was going to recycle them. And then I found out that, oh, well, Amazon may actually support them. if you call them. And I started looking into that and I found out they didn't. But when I was researching that, I found out that you could buy replacement batteries. So I did something that I'm not really comfortable doing normally. And I bought two replacement batteries and cracked open the cases on a mobile device that's not designed to open up.
Mm-hmm.
And replaced the batteries. And frankly, it couldn't have been easier. And they're both working fine. $20. Both of them are fixed.
That's cool.
I'm really happy about that.
So what's really you going to rip open that. Some iPhones next? Like,
no.
Richard's discount screen repair business?
Nope.
Now?
Not doing that. Nope. Not going there. All right. So I've been watching a bunch of stuff. We finished. Edward and I have been watching What We Do in the Shadows. We finished season 2. Still need to watch the movie. Everybody tells me the movie's really funny. So we're looking forward to that. And there is a season 3. FX has announced that they are renewing this. Who knows when it'll actually film. But this has been a really funny show. I am staying up to date with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. In fact, it's on tonight. So I'll be watching that when we are finished recording. I am about halfway through Archer season 7. I'm almost finished House of Cards season 5. It is, I guess, not surprising, but I am a little bit taken aback by how relevant the manipulation of the office stories are in the House of Cards storyline as we look at how things are getting manipulated today. I don't want to go too deep into politics, but I'm just thinking it's way more relevant than I expected it to be because it's supposed to be fiction. Also, watched another episode of Snowpiercer. Really good show. Really violent show. So not something you probably want the kids watching. And I ended up just following this on my own. Edward had just kind of had enough of it.
Wasn't the movie super violent?
Yeah, but I don't think it was this bad.
Oh.
I mean, yeah, this is really bad.
Hmm.
Anyway, the series I talked about, One Day at Disney, little short things, they're 4 or 5 minutes long, different people at Disney. I'm about 18 episodes into that now. I think they're up to 50, so I have, you know, plenty to go. We watched another episode of Cursed on Netflix. Last time we spoke about this, I couldn't even really properly remember this because we watched this at the same time that we also watched this other show, like some nun something, I don't know, some weird thing with nuns. So now this is actually about witches, and it's a really interesting twist because it's like commingling a witch storyline with the Knights of the Round Table storyline.
Hmm.
So you have Arthur and Merlin and a whole bunch of other characters way before they're who you know them as. And so they're not necessarily the characters that you expect them to be. And it's good. I'm really enjoying it. Also watched another episode of Impossible Engineering, which is just one of those, what are we going to watch tonight things? Don't want to put HGTV on. These things are always interesting, so we'll watch that. As far as movies, we watched the X-Men Apocalypse movie, which somehow we missed. Like, there was an X-Men movie, and we completely missed it. It's like 3 years old. I don't know how we missed that this was out.
I heard it was also really bad.
It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible.
And I love X-Men, and I've not seen this. I'm behind on a couple of X-Men movies at this point. But I just kept hearing that they were getting worse and worse and worse.
You have to be up to date, and you have to be up to date on the new, meaning the prequel storyline,
mm-hmm.
to understand this. But yeah, it was all right. It was all right. I enjoyed it. And as far as retro movies, I did this alone because Edward refused. I watched The Black Hole, Disney's The Black Hole.
From like the 30s or something like that? Isn't that super
old? Oh, no, come on. It was from the, I think, early 80s.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It was a fond childhood memory. It's terrible. It's just a really terrible film.
We've all got things like that wasn't good, but, you know, it's nostalgic for us.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Tony in the chat is saying that film is awesome. Yeah, I loved it. And it, in its time, It was like amazing. First of all, it was Disney doing a space adventure film, and it had all of this crazy stuff with like a black hole and a ship and these robotic weird things. But I don't think it lived up. I fell asleep twice trying to watch it. I had to wake up, restart, rewind. Anyway, I still need to watch Forbidden Planet. That was another recommendation from Tony in the chat. And then finally, and this was probably the best thing that I watched over the last month, if not more, watching astronauts Bob and Doug return to the surface last weekend. That was just so, so wonderful. I am so excited to see that we have a viable transportation system again in our country, staffed and controlled and transporting our citizens to and from the space station. It's an exciting time for space.
Yeah, that, for sure. I was thinking about that a lot just this week and what that really means for our future and what it means for, you know, all of the sci-fi movies that we've been watching for years and how capitalism, you know, plays into all of that space exploration type stuff. And it's going to be interesting to see the direction it goes for sure.
Yep.
All right. Well, for me, I do actually have a fair amount of things here and a lot of this has to do with the fact that I was on vacation, but also part of it is due to the incessant begging of my oldest child. She has been wanting me to resubscribe to Netflix for quite a while, mostly due to these To All the Boys I Loved Before movies. It's trilogy. The third movie is not out yet, but it's a Netflix exclusive, I believe. You know, it's teen fiction. She loves it. But they've also got the Babysitter's Club TV series, and she's read a bunch of those books, and that series has gotten really great reviews. So we signed up for that so that she could watch some of that stuff. And so during vacation, as we've been in the house together and stuff like that, when we've been in the house and have let them watch TV, one of the shows she's watched a lot of is a show called Alexa and Katie. And I don't even know if this is a Netflix exclusive. I mean, it's not a show that I would watch. It's a kid show. It's like a tween show, but it's pretty good. Like if you're looking for something for, you know, it's targeted at girls, tween girls, it's not going to drive you insane if your teenager is watching this in the room with you. So it's not a bad show. It's pretty good.
Maybe turn off the mic when you're echo if you have those in the room.
Yeah. I can't believe. I wonder how old this show is. It doesn't seem like it's that old. So I don't know why they chose that name for the main character. But yeah, she's also gotten into The Office. So we watched a few episodes of The Office. Man, is that show ridiculous. Wow. Like, it's still so, so cringy to watch Michael Scott in that show. Wow.
Yeah.
But that's fun.
It's funny. It would be interesting. I don't really want to watch The Office again, but it would be interesting to see some of the old episodes now when, like, having gone through the whole series, you really do come to love Michael and respect him for who he is and all of his faults. And to see him before you were that invested again now, knowing like more about him, I have to wonder what that experience would be like.
Hard. Yeah, it's still difficult because he's still such, I mean, he just never says the right thing. He never does the right thing, you know, but it's funny. It's so funny. Moving on with audiobooks, Jen kept asking me like all week last week, so have you started the next book in this Throne of Glass series? Nope. I got to finish the podcast. You know, I got to catch up on my podcast before I start this next book. And then to really like crush her heart, the next book in the Stephen King, The Dark Tower series finally became available. Like, I've been waiting for like 2 months for this book to become available from the library. And she's like, I don't care. You've got to listen to this Throne of Glass book. I'm like, no, I've been waiting for 2 months. We own these Throne of Glass books. I can listen to those whenever. So started book 5 in the series. It's called Wolves of the Calla, I guess, C-A-L-L-A. I haven't heard them actually pronounce that word yet in the book. I just started. So that's going to take a little while. In terms of more stuff I've been watching, I have been watching season 1 of Jack Ryan. I only have one episode left, the season 1 finale, and whew, that looks like it's going to be intense. So very excited to watch that. But in addition to signing up for Netflix in the last week, I also signed back up for Sling TV because hockey's back.
Okay.
And while I think it's dumb that it's back, I'm going to watch it if it's here. So
why do you think it's dumb that it's back?
Because while the way that hockey is doing it, I think, is the safest way that they can do it. They've set up these two bubble cities and
they've
stuff.
They've created bubbles, right?
It's still, it's a pretty big risk. Like, we don't know the long-term health impacts of what could happen, especially to an athlete who could end up getting COVID-19. And I love hockey. Absolutely. Like, there are a few things in life that I like more than hockey and seeing the Stanley Cup being played for. But at the risk of, like, potentially ending players' careers just
hopefully
playoffs this year?
Everybody does it right, and they don't be like the stupid Marlins were.
Right.
And screw it up for the entire league.
Yeah. Yeah, but it only takes one.
Or apparently an entire team.
Right. Yeah. So we'll see. So far, so good. No positive test in the NHL in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So it's been good. So watching a lot of hockey.
The NBA's been the same way, from what I understand. Their testing has also been really good.
Yep. Yeah. And the other cool thing with the way that they're doing it right now, and this is going to go away as we whittle the teams down, but because there are 24 teams playing right now, and there's only 2 locations, it's kind of like the Olympics. There are just hockey games on constantly. Like, the first game starts at like noon, even on weekdays, and there are games until, like, you know, midnight, all day long. It's awesome, especially when you're on vacation and can just turn it on throughout the day and watch hockey.
This weekend was nuts. I mean, this weekend was just like sports ball-a-rama.
Yes, with basketball and hockey and baseball. Yeah, there was a lot to watch. It's been nice.
It was nuts.
It's been really nice. Really nice. And then on the gaming side, when I'm on vacation, I don't get to game much. I brought the Switch. I barely touched it. So really, my only gaming was before my vacation. The guys that I normally play with got together, played a little bit more Ghost Recon Breakpoint. It's good. It's fine. It's not the greatest game ever. I'm glad we only paid $15 for it. Because the story content is so short, we decided to turn off a bunch of the guiding that you can have turned on for you. Like, in a game like this, the normal way of playing it is, here's your next mission. We're going to put a little dot on the map for you'll go there. And then when you get there, we'll put a dot like in the particular part of the building that you need to go to. Do the thing, go back, get your next quest. Well, that doesn't take very long in this game. So you can turn all of that stuff off, and then they just give you clues. It's like, well, there's a building in this province of the island that's near this lake. Go there and search for stuff. It's fine, and it definitely makes it a longer, maybe more interesting experience. But despite the fact that the game is like a year and a half old, it glitches out. Like, we wasted 45 minutes one night because one of the guys in our party, his game was crashing weird, and he found the character that we were supposed to talk to. And when he found that character, his game crashed. He had to relaunch the game. And when he came back, and even while we were wandering along, that character that we were supposed to talk to, they just weren't available. It was not there. We all had to quit the game, reload the game, and go back to that spot for it to all work. And it's crap like that that keeps happening. So I'm like, guys, I know it's going to be shorter, but I don't want to play like this. It's not fun. So I don't know that we're going to keep doing it that way, but the rest of the gameplay experience is fun, but this way of trying to make it not so guided for you, just it's not working well.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right. That's it for what's going on in my entertainment center also. So that's it for this rather lengthy episode. We cut stories. August is not a time when we would normally be cutting stories from the lineup. I want to mention, we do have a Flipboard that we use for keeping track of stories. It's got tons and tons of followers out there, but it's basically one of the ways that we're like communicating with each other throughout the week of, you know, maybe this is a good story for the show. We'll put a link to that Flipboard, if you use that service, in the show notes, because there are things that we didn't talk about tonight that you might be interested in hearing more about. So you can check that out. And it's kind of a way to get a sneak peek at what we might be talking about on the show as we plan things going forward. So we'll get a link to that for you all. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at Digi Media Zone. We're also on Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. Go to the show notes for all of those links. Richard's also got another podcast over at the DMZ called Home On, and you've got a new episode of that up.
Yeah, so I finally released the episode with YouTuber HomeKit Geek, and we spent a lot of time talking about the Apple event, the Google event, and other news that's been going on this summer. And then I'm working on a number of really cool guests coming up in the next couple of months. I have a reporter from Consumer Reports lined up, and I'm talking with the CEO of IFTTT. So we have some cool stuff coming up.
Cool. It was a good episode.
It was a lot of fun. Chris and I had so much fun recording that episode. And this was another one that was just such a hard edit because we recorded nearly 2 hours of material.
Oh my gosh.
And I had to bring it down to an hour.
All right. Well, we also do this show live on Twitch. It's normally Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll probably be on that schedule next week. I haven't looked at my calendar. Like I said, I just got back from vacation. I'm not looking at calendars today. Do that tomorrow. So follow us on Twitter to know for sure when we're going to be live streaming. It's a lot of fun. We love having you all in the chat. And it is your way to contribute in real time to the show, and we love it and have a lot of fun with it. So that's going to do it for episode 529. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.